All right, Chavra, welcome back to Chabura. It's great to see everyone. And it's been obviously another difficult week on many levels for many people. And we just daven that this coming week will be a better week. Less sad news, more good news, Meretz Hashem. Hopefully the learning that we do should, first of all, be somewhat of a positive distraction from all that's going on. You know, the Pasuk says, "P'kuli Hashem Yishar Misam Chelev," which is one reason why we don't learn Torah during Avelus, but it really tells us that Torah is supposed to make us happier and happy the spirit, happy the neshama. So hopefully it'll do that for us. But of course, additionally, the learning that we do should be a zchus for all those that need a refuah shlema, and for those that, really for all of Klal Yisrael and all of the world to be protected. I think we all could agree that we're ready for this to be over. Tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever the message was, we'll take it to heart. We'll try to be better. We'll try to do tshuva, but we're ready for this to end and to be able to serve Hashem in a better way altogether. So with that, we'll start with the sugyas that we'll be doing tonight. So usually, as you know, we do Torah Tumima. So tonight we're not going to really touch any Torah Tumimas, but it'll be in the themes of Torah Tumima, in the sense that usually what we try to do with Torah Tumima is to try to get to the sense, to get a sense of what the makor, the source is for different halachos. And then once we know what the source is, where things come from, so then we could see how that plays out in terms of some practical halachic ramifications. So we'll try to do that tonight. We'll start with the minhag of kitnios, which I'm sure everyone knows about, but maybe we could just review and go over and maybe learn something new about where this might come from, and if there is some source in the Gemara, even if it will be an indirect source, we'll try to figure that out. Then we'll spend a little bit less time on the minhag of gebrux, which probably a less common minhag amongst those that are listening, but I'm sure there's some gebrux minhagim amongst ourselves, including myself a little bit, which we'll get to. And then we'll end with just a thought from this week's parsha that has to do with Pesach, a thought about the Korban Toldah. So let's start with kitnios. So in your source sheet, so you'll see the Gemara in Pesachim Lamed Hei Amud Aleph. So it says pretty clearly that there are certain grains that are considered chametz, and there are certain grains that could be used for matzah. As we'll see, those are the same types of grains. And there are certain things that clearly do not fall under that category. So the Mishnah says, "Elu dvarim she'adam yotze b'hanidei chavasu v'pesach." These are the grains that a person could be yotze the mitzvah of matzah on Pesach. B'chitim b'se'orim, so that's wheat and barley, kusman, spelt, shifon, rye, shibolat, shual, many define as oats. It's a little bit of a controversy, but we'll just assume that means oats. So those are the five grains that a person could be owed to the mitzvah of matzah. So the Gemara says, honey in Erez V'dochad, lo? You're telling me that only these you could use for matzah, but not rice or millet? So Menahal Nemewi, so where does this come from? Who's the author of this? Amar Rishon Belakish, V'chein Tana Deber Rishmael, V'chein Tana Deber Eliezer Ben Yaakov, Amar Kra. So the Psukim say in Parshas Re'eh, lo tocha alav chametz, so you can't have chametz shivas yomim, tocha alav matzah. So for 7 days you can't have chametz, and you should eat matzah. So there's a hekesh, there's a connection between the not eating chametz and that you should eat matzah. So says the Braisa, dvarim habam li dechimutz, adam yotze b'nani dechos of a matzah. So something that will come to be an iser chametz, those grains are the same grains that you could be yotze the mitzvah matzah. Yatsu elu she'ein ba'an lidei chimatz, ela lidei sirchon. So to the exclusion of any other grain, i.e. the rice and the millet, that it doesn't ferment, it doesn't, if you let the rice flour sit with water, it doesn't do what wheat does. Like anyone who's seen anyone bake challah, or if you bake challah yourself, right? If you have the flour and the water, there's a fermentation, it grows. So that would not happen with rice, says the Braisa. Ella, the opposite, it would be sirchon. It would actually ruin it. It would actually be disgusting. So therefore, according to this opinion, you would not be yotze the mitzvah of matzah, and you would not be over the iser of chametz with rice or millet. Masnisan de lo k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But this Mishnah clearly is not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Why? Damar de Amar, he says, Orez min daganu. That he says, no, rice is actually one of the grains. V'chayavan achi mitzol kares. And therefore, if you would actually have rice flour that would come in contact with water, it would be together for over 18 minutes, that would be considered chametz, and if you eat it, you would be chas v'sholam chayav kares. The Tanar of Yochanan ben Nuri oser b'orez v'dochan v'pnei shakarov lahachmetz. So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who's a Tana, right, so it's a big deal, he says that orez and dochan is karov lahachmetz, and therefore you would be chayiv kares if you have rice flour and you eat it on Pesach. So what does karov lahachmetz mean? Anyone could chime in. He says that you would be over kares, in Isser Kares, if you eat the rice flour, this rice bread, because it's Karov Lahachmetz. Anyone want to chime in? Okay, if not, I'll just say it out. So on the one hand, it sounds like the fact that he's saying you're Chayav Kares makes it sound like it's Chametz Mamish, meaning the same way wheat becomes Chametz, and if you eat it, you're Chayav Kares. So too, if rice is fermenting and it becomes Chametz, you should be Chayav Kares. But at the same time, he says, Karav Lahachmetz. Karav Lahachmetz makes it sound like it's not quite Chametz. So the way Sar Mishorim explained it, it means Karav Lahachmetz, that it's not only does it become Chametz, but it even becomes Chametz even quicker than these other grains. I mean, Karav Lahachmetz means that it's actually quicker to become Chametz. So, we'll learn it that way for now. So what we see is, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, you would be Chayav for non-one of the five grains in terms of the Isser Isser Chametz. Okay, so that's according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So in terms of our question that we're keeping in the back of our head about this question of kitnios, which we know are things other than the main five grains, those things being considered chametz or staying away from them on Pesach, so do we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri or do we paskin like the Chachamim? So the next source seems to tell us how we paskin. There's another Gemara, Pesachim Kuf Yedal Adam Abayz. So it's dealing with the question of how on the Seder plate, on the Ka'ara, we have to have two tavshilin. So our minhag, as we know, is to have the hard-boiled egg and to have a shank bone. But the Gemara has a lot of different opinions. So the Gemara says, my shnei tavshilin, what are these two cooked items that we're supposed to have? And just parenthetically, it's supposed to remind us of the Korban Chagiga and the Korban Pesach. So what are these two cooked items? Amar Rav Huna, soka ve aroza. So Rav Huna says it was soka, which is a kind of vegetable, and aroza, which is rice. So Rava have a mahadar, soka ve aroza, ho venafak mipume de Rav Huna. So he sort of, Rava was such a chassid of Rav Huna, and if Rav Huna used these two things, so Rava ran to use specifically those two things, the soka and the rice, to have on the kara. So Amar Rav Ashi, shma mina de Rav Huna, less the chayish lahad Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So it must be the fact that he had rice. It was rice sitting at his seder table on the kara. So it must be he didn't hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The Tanya, as we went to the brayso, as we said earlier, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer Oras Min Dagan Hu V'Chayav Nachamito Kares Adam Yotze BaYedei Chavasa V'Pesach. So clearly we don't hold, at least Rava and Rav Huna didn't hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, because they had rice on the table at the Seder night. So we see that we don't hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and that only those five grains could become chametz. Does anyone have any minor kasha maybe on this proof? The fact that he had rice on his Seder plate? Anyone want a dingzach? Want to ask a kasha on that proof? All right. Bueller? Okay, so I'll say it again. So maybe, perhaps you could say that even if we held like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, he just said that you can't eat the chametz, right, if it actually ferments. But perhaps, again, I'm not saying that you can necessarily say this for sure, but perhaps the rice, just like we don't necessarily eat the shank bone, it's just sitting there. So maybe just the rice being there, assuming, let's say, it didn't come into contact with water, and it never became chametz, so you're not over ba'al yamatzei just by having plain rice sitting there. So perhaps you could say that, but the problem with saying that is that it says shnei tavshilin, which makes it sound like that it had to have been cooked, and presumably cooked means that it's with water, so then it probably did ferment. So if that's the case, that the rice did ferment, the only way that they would be able to have it on the kara would be if they held, not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, and that rice and millet, by extension, would not be chametz at all. Okay, so that ad kan really... Yeah, Sean.
Let's ask you one question. You're saying on the Seder plate or on the table at the Seder?
Well, both. What's the difference?
What's the simon of having rice on a Seder plate? What does it represent?
Well, the idea is to have shnei tavshilin. The Gemara says you have to have shnei, the Mishnah says you have two tavshilin. So the Gemara has a long discussion, what should those two tavshilin be? So we are used to having the zroa and the beitza, but a lot of the opinions of the Gemara say to have other things. So he said to have rice. Why rice? So that I'm not sure. Why would he specifically want that? I'm sure some of the commentaries deal with that, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure why, like, Hidafka wanted rice. But for our purposes...
Zroa is Korban Pesach and...
And the basis for the Chagiga. Right, correct, yeah. Yeah.
For the rice, we don't know.
Right, yeah. But for our purposes, the point is that he clearly allowed the rice. So if you just look at our Talmud Bavli, so it definitely seems like there should be no issue at all to come up with any reasons to avoid other grains. So what would this be based on? So we're not going to have any clear Gemara that's going to tell us that kitnios should be a problem. But there are two Gemaras that some of the Acharonim use as hints to the fact that this idea of kitnios didn't come out of nowhere, but it's kind of relying on some svara from the Gemara. So the first one is actually the Aruch HaShulchan, who is another connection to the Torah Tzmima. Why? Because the Aruch HaShulchan was the Torah Tzmima's father. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that maybe a smach for Araminog to have kitnios, or to aser kitnios, is from the Yerushalmi based on the first Gemara that we did. So if you look at Source Gimel, so the Yerushalmi asks a pretty basic question. We have this machlokes, Chachamim and Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, whether rice and millet could actually ferment to become chametz. So what's the simple solution? If you were in the Beis Midrash listening to this machlokes, what would you say the solution should be? To actually check, right? Do a science experiment. Actually have rice flour, have it sit with water, see if it actually ferments. So the Yerushalmi says they actually did that. So the Yerushalmi says, V'yiv tekena, why didn't they just check? So the Gemara says, al ikur b'dikasa hein chokin, that no, exactly, they actually did check, but that's what their machlokas is. It's very interesting. Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri amar, badku, umatsu osa, shiyubawide matzo v'chametz. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri checked it. I don't know if he checked it himself or he had his lab check it. And he determined, or they determined, that actually it did become chametz. For Rabbanan Amrin, batkua v'lo matzuasa, shibo ede matzu v'chametz. But the Chacham said, no, our sources tell us, or we ourselves, it's unclear, but they checked it and they said that it was not chametz. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that without this Yerushalmi, maybe I would have learned our Bavli, where it just says that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, you have to be careful about the rice and the millet, because karov lahachmetz, meaning that it's a little bit confusing, it's karov lahachmetz, it sort of could ferment, so therefore those things also are included in being yotzei matzah, and they're also included in terms of being over chametz. That's what you would have said. The karov lahachmetz means maybe. Maybe it's karov, so therefore you have to include it. But now the Yerushalmi is saying that no, it's not that karov lahachmetz that we want to make sure you don't get confused. But karov lahachmetz means that it actually is quicker to become chametz, kind of like we said before. So if that's the case, and that there were tana'im that held that these grains, the rice and the millet, could actually become chametz, so then therefore we want to be yotzei l'chol hadeah, says the Aruch HaShulchan, and that's how the minhag developed, and as we'll see, you know, where, when and where it developed, but the minhag developed because we want to be yotzei like both shitas of the Tanaim. That it wasn't just that Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri said that, maybe we should be careful, because then we would have said, okay, you know what, we paskim like the Chachamim, clearly the Gemara paskim like the Chachamim, the Gemara said that they had rice on the table, so game over, we pass him like the Chachamim and not Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Yerushalmi is telling us that Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri actually checked it, and it does ferment. So since it does ferment, we want to be extra careful, and therefore we started this minhag of kitnios. The second possible Gemara that's a hint to...
What are you saying,
I'm sorry?
Where's that Aruch HaShulchan?
The Aruch HaShulchan, it's in Tufnum Gimel. I forgot the exact letter, but I can send it to you later. So that's one possible makor. Again, it's definitely a stretch, but it's not really a makor. And the second Gemara is used by the Vilna Gaon. So the Vilna Gaon quotes the Gemara in Psachim Mem Amud Beis, it's in Soris Dalet. So it says, Rav Papi Shari Le Lebordiki De Beirish Galusa Lemamacha Kedera Bechasisi. So it says, one of the Amoraim, Rav Papi, so he allowed the cooks of the Reish Galusa. The Reish Galusa was the exilarch. So Rav Papi, I guess, was the Mashkiach of the household of the Reish Galusa. So Rav Papi allowed the cooks to smear the kederos with chasisi, meaning if it was on Pesach, and they could smear the kederos with chasisi. So what was chasisi? So hold that thought. So Amar Rava says, Ika deshari ki hai milsa beduchta deshchichi avdi? Rava says, would anyone allow to do this in a place where there are avadim around? I mean, people that don't know so much, that aren't holding. So where avadim are around, where there are servants around that aren't holding so much, he would allow the cooks to smear it with chasisi. Then the Gemara says, Ika damri, but some say that Rava gufa machilak kidra be chasisi, that Rava himself actually also smeared his pots on Pesach with chasisi. So what was the purpose of smearing it? It was probably something like, you know, we use Pam or oil to kind of make the kalim not stickable. So it's probably something like that. So what was chasisi though? That there was this question that Rav Ashi said, how could you allow the cooks to smear it with chasisi? So what was chasisi? So Tosfos says, Nere l'ri k'deparish ba'arach b'chasisi kemach shel adashim. So the Ri says that chasisi was some sort of bean. Adashim is like lentils. So it was a bean flour, and they would use the bean flour to actually smear that on the pans. And that's what Rav Ashi was objecting to. How could you let them smear the bean powder on the pans if the avadim are around? And the avadim are gonna, who don't know so much, are gonna get confused, and they're gonna think that maybe you're doing something that's actually chametz. As the Ri says, the ein darkim lavoli dechimetz kolkach, that adashim aren't things that actually ferment. You can't actually make a real good bread from the lentils, from the lentil flour, but because it didn't look good, Rav Ashi said, you shouldn't use this bean flour to smear on the pots and pans. So says the Vilna Gaon, maybe this is another smach, another, again, it's definitely not a clear-cut raya that we should have this concept of kinyos, but it's maybe a smach for it. The fact that Rav Ashi was concerned that the avadim are going to see that the person's using this bean powder. And since the avadim don't know so much, they might think it's flour of wheat or one of the five grains, and therefore we should avoid it. So these are two possible gemaras. Again, the Aruch HaShulchan's gemara, really that's a Yerushalmi that says that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, it mamish could ferment, that rice could mamish become chametz. And then the other one, the one that we just saw, that the Gra uses about this chasisi. So where's the first time we really see this concept of kinyos? So if you look at source Hay, so the Tur, who is a lot of the Ashkenazi psak, and really a lot of the Shulchan Aruch based his sefer off of the Tur. So the Tur quotes Yesh Osrin Lachol Orez V'Chomayin Kinyos Betavshil. So some aser to have orez rice. And any other kitnios, which again is not so easy to define. We usually say kitnios are legumes. What exactly a legume is, I'm not 100% sure. But basically, kitnios became this category of other types of grains or vegetables or seeds that are used to make flour. So the Torah says that there are those that aser it. Why? Sheminei chitim is arvin behen. So this is the Torah's reason. The Torah says it's because there are other grains, meaning there might be wheat grain or oat grain or barley grain that gets mixed in to the rice grain or to the kitnios grain. But says the Torah, v'chumra yaserehi v'lo nagu kein. So the Torah, which was already, I think, in the 1300s, so the Torah says that there is this minhag, which was probably from, you know, a couple hundred years before, so a lot of people think it started from the times of the Gaonim. So there was this minhag, but we're not nohag like that. And the reason that he gives why there would be an issue is because of the grains, the other types of grains getting mixed in to the kitnios. So the Bach, who is a couple hundred years later, after the Torah, he says, "Amasha kasa v'yesh osrin lechol orez v'chulei, kein kasa v'smak." So the smak gives the reason of the Torah, that it's because you might actually have other things mixed in. Avalomi tam shakasa rabbeinu, but not because of so the smak doesn't give the reason that the Torah gave, that things might get mixed in. V'fisha minei chitim is arve mehen, ela kevan she ra'i lasos mimenu isa, asila achlufe b'shar minei isos dagan. So basically, the Torah gave his reason that other grains might get mixed into the kidneys. The smak, quoted by the Bach, says that no, it's not because of other grains getting mixed in. It's because since you make bread from these other grains, like rice bread and cornbread, all these things that we consider kidneys, so since we make it into a dough, and people that don't know might think that it's real. From the five grains. So since we don't want to confuse people, that's the reason why we have this minhag of kidneys. And this would be similar to the Gruz, you know, semi-raya from the Gemara about Chasisi, which was the concern that the Avadim are going to see, and the Avadim don't know so much, so it's going to confuse them. So that's where the smak is coming from. So we have these two reasons. We have the Tur, who says that it's because there actually might be grains that get mixed in. There might be grains of wheat that get mixed into the kinyos grains when they store them or when they package them, etc. And this other reason is that it actually might confuse people because it looks like bread. Okay. So, how does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? So, as you probably know, in Soros Vav, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam. The Rambam says there's no issue whatsoever for rice or any kinyot, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch says no issue whatsoever, only from those five grains. Those are the only issues in terms of chametz. But as you can imagine, the Ramah chimes in. If you look at the second half of Source Vav, so we see in the Haggah, it says, V'yesh osrim, right? There are those that aser, and it goes to Tur, and the goes Mamonios, the Mordechai. Ba'minug ba'ashkenaz lahachmir. So the custom in the countries of Bnei Ashkenaz, which was France, Germany, Poland, etc. So the minhag was to be machmir. But now the Ramah throws in very important caveats to that chumrah. He says, first of all, ein lashanos, a person shouldn't change their minhag. Mihu pasha de ein osrim b'di eved em naflu toch hatavsho. He says, because this is not found in the Gemara anywhere, because it's a minhag, it's not even on the level of an Issur D'Rabbanan, it's on the level of a minhag. There's no source for it in the Gemara, we just have these allusions to it, possibly. So if something falls into a tavshil, if something from kidneys, you definitely can eat it. And many of the posts can point out, the Mishnah Berurah quotes, that as long as a majority of the mixture is kidneyot, then that would be, if the majority of it would not be kidneyot and not chametz at all, I mean the majority of it is totally kosher l'Pesach, that would be totally fine. The only issue would be if rov becomes kidneyot, then that would be a problem. But anything less than rov, it would be totally fine. Then the Ramah throws in also, v'chein mutter l'halik b'shmanim hanasimehem. You also could use the oil of kidneyot to light candles, meaning that there's no Isser Hana. Even though by actual chametz, we say that you can't get Hana, by kinyot, there's no Isser Hana. And again, because it's already kind of weak where this minug even stems from, so therefore there's no Isser Hana. And then he throws in a very important halach l'maisa also, v'chein mutter l'hashos mine kinyos b'bayis, meaning that there's absolutely no Isser of Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzeh when it comes to kinyos. So you're allowed to have kinyos lying around the house, even those that get rid of all the chametz and they don't sell chametz, they just want to get rid of it, give it away, or throw it out, or burn it, etc. It's totally fine to have kinyos lying around. So again, number one, There's no issue if it's mixed in. There's a little bit of a question of, you know, you probably know the concept of ein mevalen iser lechatchila. So there's a potential an issue of purposely making something knowing that it's less than 50% kitnios. And that's why the kashrus agencies, at least most of them, if not all of them, won't say kosher lePesach, at least for Ashkenazim, if there's kitnios inside, even though it's totally batel, but we don't do it, we aim a vow and iser lechatchila, so we don't go out of our way to do it purposely. That's why they won't give, you know, kosher lePesach hechsherim, but it does create some interesting shilas. Let's say, first of all, let's say I'm not the one doing the bitzel. Let's say I'm just buying it, right? Because I'm not, if I'm buying, Coca-Cola, let's say, that has kitnios in it, right? The non-kosher lePesach one. So maybe me buying it is not being mevata l'issa l'chachila. The ones who are making it are the ones who are being mevata l'issa l'chachila. And now I'm having it, but it's less than 50% kitnios, because it's mostly water. So maybe that would be okay. So there's definitely room to play around with when it comes to that. And also in terms of, you know, eating over at someone's house, let's say you want to eat over at this year, unfortunately, it probably won't be so relevant. But if you're eating over at someone's house who's Sephardi, so even if they don't serve kitnios, the question becomes, you know, let's say they have, you know, they cook something. They cook potato kugel in a pot that also is used to make kitnios. So would that be a problem? So on the one hand, you would say that, you know, it's mevav and iser lechachila. So there's the tam of the kineos that goes into the potato kugel, and that's me eating it is doing like a purposeful bitzel. But Rav Avadya Yosef and many other poskim say that that's totally fine. That's not considered being mevatel the kineos lechachila. The hosts are Sephardi. They were totally allowed to make the potato kugel in the pot that maybe had kineos cooked in it. So therefore, it's not a problem according to most poskim to have that potato kugel. So some other shilas that come up, and just one thing that comes up sometimes with the Isser Hana, you know, there's a lot of, I don't want to get too into the Isser Hana, but just to keep it simple, you're definitely allowed to have Hana when it comes to the kineo. So just a few other interesting.
It always says that it's usher to make a tavsha with these things. Could you make a corn cracker as long as you knead it and bake it within 18 minutes?
Right, so that's a great question.
Not to, but it shouldn't be any worse than wheat, right? Because
yes, that's a great point. So I saw in Rabbi Yitzchak Abadi's Chuvos, or Yitzchak, we're speaking of Rav Simon, you know, Rav Simon talks to Rav Abadi a lot. So Rav Abadi thinks that Ashkenazim, and he quotes a number of Achronim who actually say this, that you shouldn't have to be more machmir on kineos than you would be for the other five grains, right? It's kind of wild how that became the minhag. That for regular wheat or barley, if you just have the actual wheat or barley lying around and it never becomes in contact for more than 18 minutes, you're 100% right, Michael, that's totally fine. But for kineos, we're almost more machmir. So Rav Abadi quotes Achron who say that you don't have to be. The minug seems to be, I think, in general, the minug seems to be that we're to a certain degree more machmir by kitnios in terms of that. That we don't even want to have it around, and you can't eat it even if it never went through the fermentation process. But why that is a good point. Any other questions? Okay, so there's a few more interesting mar makomos, and then we'll get to gebrux. So in source number 7, I'm not going to read it inside, but the Mishnah Berurah quotes also two very important halacha lemaisa in terms of kitnios. Again, because it's such a, you know, it's a weak foundation to begin with, the Mishnah Berurah says that b'shas hatzchak, if people, you know, don't have food, if it's eis tzara, where it's hard to get food that's not kitniot, the Mishnah Berurah says it's definitely okay to eat kitniot. I saw there were some, you know, questions floating around. You know, this year we're definitely in an eis tzara, but I don't think anyone would really say that we're in such an eis tzara that we don't have enough food to eat. That's non-kitniot. So I don't think this would apply this year. But You know, if there was chas v'shalom an eis tzara where people would actually wouldn't be able to get food, then that would be another heter to have kitniot. And the other very important one, which if any of you saw Rav Shefter's psaks that are being sent around, which are very helpful. So Rav Shefter wrote this, that definitely any sort of chola, anyone that would need to eat kitniot for their own health, any medications that might have kitniot, vitamins that might have kitniot, those things would all be okay, because for a chola or for an extra need, we would definitely be makel. The question that we're not going to address tonight, which is a whole other shiur, of how you define kitniot, I've kind of been purposely avoiding that. We're getting more about where the source comes from and some practical ramifications. It's a very complicated question, and partly because of the shuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, who makes a very important point that a lot of the kashrus agencies hold by, and that's in Source Ches. Rav Moshe famously says that lo nesru ela haminim shehenhigu v'lo shar minim shlo hinhigu mepi shlo hayimutsuyin az. Meaning that it's already kind of a nebulous minhag, that again, it's an important minhag, and we keep to minhag Yisrael, minhag Yisrael Toru, but because it doesn't have the strongest of foundations, it's only things that were included when the minhag actually started. So whenever it was, 1100s or before then, things that were around then that became established as kitniot, that's what's a problem. But what Rav Moshe is actually addressing in this tshuva, is, you know, peanuts. And Rav Moshe actually feels that peanuts should not necessarily be considered kitniot. Many poskim, though, nowadays do consider it, and that's why I think the minhag for most people is that peanuts are considered kitniot. But he says definitely tepuchei adama, potatoes, which at one point in our history, that was itself a hak, that was a big machlokas, whether potatoes should be considered kitniot, because you could make potato bread, it has the same issues, you could get confused. But, you know, we wouldn't be able to survive. That's a shas, that's chak, to not have potatoes. Everything that we eat on Pesach is from potato starch and potato flour, etc. So Rav Moshe says that since it would be too difficult to keep the potatoes as a minhag of kitniot, and because the tamim are klushim, the original reasons for kitniot are kind of weak to begin with, we're not going to add more things to the list. And that's why when, you know, quinoa was a big hack a couple years ago, a lot of people pointed to this Rav Moshe to say that quinoa is relatively recent, discovery to a certain degree in terms of making it to our kitchens. And that's why a lot of the kashrus agencies say that it was never part of the original gzeira and therefore would be okay. Okay, so before we move on to gebraks, any questions about kitniot? Right, so we haven't kept to this Rav Moshe fully, and that's why it's a very it's a complicated sugya, how things have made it to the list of kinios and which things have not. Yeah, I don't know enough about all the details of it, and I think to be honest, there might not be consistent rules about it. So, but your point is well taken, Ben.
Saying that if someone cooked something without kitniot in a pot that was cooked for kitniot, it wouldn't be a problem to eat it.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Because again, the bittul, if something, even if kitniot are 49% of the dish, b'di'evad, you could eat it. So this would be dealing with just the tam that's in the pot that's going in. And he says that you weren't the one who was mevatel l'chachila. Meaning it's not like you were the one who purposely cooked your potato kugel in the pot. Someone else did it who was allowed to, and now you're just eating at their house. So he says that's definitely too far removed for it to be an issue. He also, I think he throws in there that it's like a shas hatzchak, especially if it's like, you know, a family member. You know, I'm sure people right here have, you know, mixed families where you have a son-in-law that, you know, is Sephardi and eating at the Ashkenazi in-laws or vice versa. So you have, you know, issues like this. So I think he says that it's like a shas hatzchak, it would cause shalom bayis problems. Definitely there's room to be makel with that.
Can you send me that tshuva also, or at least the source?
Yeah, sure. I'll send it on the WhatsApp for another. Okay, but we're actually going to get to another good Rebbe Avadja when it comes to Gebrucks. Okay, so we're not going to spend as much time on Gebrucks, maybe around 10 minutes. So Gebrucks also, as you can imagine, very little in terms of clear proofs that this should be a problem. If anything, kind of like Kitnios, we see Adarabba from the Gemara. And the Gemara Psachim, Mem Aleph, Amad Aleph, in Source Tes, says, the Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Yotzin berekik hasharui ubemavushal shaloni muach. So it's talking about what you could be yotze in terms of the mitzvah of matzah at the Seder. So the Tanakama, who's Rabbi Meir, says yotzin berekik hasharui, you could be yotze with the cracker, the crunchy matzah that's sharui, that's soaked in water, ubemavushal, and even if it's cooked, you could be yotze shaloni muach, as long as it's not totally a mush. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yotzin berekik hasharui, you can be yotze with the cracker, with the crunchy matzah, if it's soaked. Aval lo b'mavushal, afal pi shaloni moach, but not cooked. So basically, the machlokas tanam is whether you could be yotze the mitzvah of matzah with cooked matzah. But everyone agrees that if it's soaked in water, you can be yotze the mitzvah. So what do we see clearly from this? That there might be this issue in terms of matzah mitzvah if it's something is cooked, and that has to do with the sugya of you know, it changes the status of it. It's not a shame matzah anymore. It's not called matzah for the mitzvah of matzah. But everyone agrees that you could be yotze if it's soaked in water, and that's even to be yotze the mitzvah of matzah. It's not question. It's not asking is it considered chametz or not. It's saying could you be yotze the mitzvah of matzah. So clearly the Gemara is saying that yes, you can be yotze the mitzvah of matzah, and clearly it's not chametz if matzah is soaked in water. So who causes the chumrah? So the most famous one is the Shulchan Aruch Rav, and that's why in Chabad and amongst the Hasidic world, the Shulchan Aruch Rav, the Baal HaTanya, people associate with Chabad because he was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. But he was also a very important posek in the whole Hasidic world. So a lot of Hasidic dynasties follow the Shulchan Aruch Rav. So Shulchan Aruch Rav gives two potential problems with what we call gebruks if the matzah is soaked in water. So in Sor Sid Av says the Shulchan Aruch Rav, Shanogim Shlo Lishros HaMatzah BePesach. So there became a minog to not dip the matzah in water on Pesach. Benasan Tam, what's the reason? Shumipnei pizer kemach agabe hamatzah. Says, first of all, there might be some flour that's still sitting on top of the matzah. B'makom shakemach v'matzah smuchim zavazah. Right? So you have your box of shatz or matzah, and there might be some extra flour that's on top of the matzah. So now if you dip that matzah that has some flour on it into water, it could cause it to ferment if it's together for 18 minutes, and that would be an issue of chametz. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, v'chein yesh lachash l'matzah shlo nafis yafa. It's not for the flour that's on top of the matzah. It's that the matzah itself is not fully baked. Machas rov hamahiras, because we're so quick to bake the matzah, maybe it wasn't baked well enough. V'nishar v'emtsiusa kamach, and there might be some flour, some unbaked dough still inside the matzah. And if you dip it into the water, it would become chametz. So clearly against the Gemara, right? Because the Gemara itself said that you could dip the matzah in the water, and the Gemara didn't seem to have an issue with, oh, but maybe there's flour on it, or maybe some of the matzah isn't fully baked. But the minhag became to be machmer because of these two reasons. So in terms of the minhag and why maybe, even if you would hold the minhag, it might not apply in certain situations. So first of all, we have the Ravan in source Yud Aleph. So the Ravan is actually a Rishon. And the Ravan actually gives me a little bit of explanation to my own family's minhag. Because the Ravan says, I'll just read it quickly, he says, first of all, there's no issue to have the matzah in water, because once it's baked already, it can't become chametz. As we see from the Gemara, that the Gemara is totally fine putting the matzah into the water. says v'yesha enam rotzim lishros hamatzah b'marak b'lel haseder. So the Ravan says that some are machmir to not have the matzah dipped in soup at the seder. Ki roas avosem shasu kein, because they saw that's what their parents did. Ukisvurim shumishim shlotachmetz. And they think the reason why, oh, it must be because that we're afraid there might be flour, there might be unbaked dough, it might become chametz. He says, no, v'eino chein. Shlo nagu lehimana melishos hamatzah b'marak, elo kadei shia tam matzah b'fihem kol halayla harishon shel Pesach. The Ravan says that people think the reason why the minhag of their parents was to not dip the matzah in soup at the Seder was because it might become chametz. The Ravan says no, it's because you want to have the tam matzah. There are different halachas when it comes to the matzah at the Seder. We're not supposed to put salt on it. It's supposed to be a lechem oni. We're not supposed to dip the matzah, at least for the mitzvah of matzah. You're supposed to have the pristine tam of just matzah. And therefore, they didn't dip it into the soup. But nothing to do with it becoming chametz. So the reason why this is an explanation for my own family's minhag is because my grandfather, Zatzal, so he introduced the minhag that we don't eat gebraks on the first days of Pesach. And then the rest of Pesach, it was totally fine for our family to have gebraks. So I never fully understood what that's based on. So I still don't fully understand it, because this would just explain for the actual starim, where there's a mitzvah of matzah. But at least maybe that kind of evolved somehow into the minhag of not having a brux on the whole first 2 days of Yontif. But clearly from the Ravan, it seems like the minhag was established to not have gebrux, at least at the Seder, so that you would have the tam matzah b'fihem. But again, nothing to do with the fact that it would become chametz. So, and
my uncle always said the reason you don't do it at the Seder.
Yeah.
In the Manish Tana, we say we dip twice.
Ah, okay. Oh, very good. Very good. I don't know if that was his own chiddush, if he saw that somewhere, but very good. So that's the Ravan. In the Sefer Shari Tshuva, commentary on Shulchan Aruch. Yeah.
Is there an issue? It came up this year because people are saying, you know, they're afraid of Barber Park and Williamsburg matzahs because of Corona. Mm-hmm. They want to know if they can bake the Shmur matzah when they get it to kill any germs. So is there a shiloh of cooking matzah after it's already done being baked?
Okay, good question. So it depends what you mean by cooking it. Meaning, if you're saying just putting it in the oven and kind of charring it out a bit, so then that will be totally fine.
If there's flour that may, you know, turn to chametz or whatever, the gebrux issue.
Well, I mean, are you saying if you hold the gebrux, if you're machmir for gebrux?
No, but is it a chametz issue? Like, I know people make matzah pizza, whatever. Isn't there a whole shiloh that has to be 18 minutes? You can't leave it in for 25 or whatever.
Right, no, but that's more of an issue of the fermentation process. Once it's already matzah and it's already like hard and done, I think part of what we're saying is that there's no issue of chametz anymore. It's already past the chametz issue, unless you potentially hold of this problem of introducing new water to it, and that's where gebrux come from. But in terms of just, you know, heating it up, there's no issue of chametz anymore. Right, good point. So what the Shari Tshuva says in Source Yud Beis, I'm not going to read it inside. So he says that this whole issue of gebrux made more sense with the matzahs that we used to have back in the day. In the times of the Gemara, and you know, for generations after that, the matzah they had was soft matzah. And there are a number of rayas for this. My father-in-law, who's like a bucky when it comes to bread, he always said that one clear raya for this is that the korech described in the Gemara is not our korech, where we kind of like smush the matzah over the lettuce and it kind of usually cracks and breaks. It was more like a lafa, because it was soft matzah that you would just kind of wrap, and they would have the Korban Pesach with it in times of the Beis HaMikdash, and it would be like an awesome lafa. It was like a shawarma lafa with some lettuce. That's what they used to have. So, and there are a lot of other rites for this also. But historically, the matzah used to be soft. And as you probably know, and even nowadays, some Sephardi communities still have the soft matzah. But the soft matzah is thicker and less crunchy, obviously, than ours. So the Shari Tshuva says that the issue of gebrux is really more of an issue with the soft matzah, because then you could say maybe there was some, you know, dough, you know, just like if you bake bread, sometimes there's some parts that, you know, didn't fully bake through. So maybe you could say there might be an issue of now if you put that in hot water, that could become chametz. But with the hard, crunchy matzah, says the Shaar HaTshuva, that should not be an issue. He doesn't address the other issue of the Shulchan Aruch Harav, meaning the first issue, potential issue of the flour being on top of the matzah, that, you know, I guess would still be an issue with the crunchy matzah. But at least the issue of the part of the matzah that's unbaked, that should not be an issue, he says, when it comes to our crunchy matzah. And there's two other very interesting tshuvas. I'm not going to read them inside, but one Rav Avadya tshuva about trying to change your minhag when it comes to gebraks. So let's say a person grew up in a family where they kept gebraks, and now they don't want to do it anymore. It's much harder. There's much less delicious, kosher Pesach food. So they want to change their minhag. So Rav Avadya is a very interesting chiluk. He says that it depends why you were keeping the minhag in the first place. He says if you thought that it really should be usser, that you were convinced that it should be usser, because what if there is flour that's on top of the matzah? What if there is part of the matzah that isn't fully baked? So if you really thought that it should be that it was really halacha, and now you want to change your mind, so he says then you could change it because that's a minhag b'taos. And this is like a classic Rav Avadya way of thinking about like silly Ashkenazi minhagim, that if you thought that it was a real thing and now you realize that it's not a real thing, you don't even have to do Hataras Nadarim because it was a minhag b'taos. You started doing the minhag, but it was a mistake because you didn't realize that it wasn't a sound halachic reasoning. But if you did it, not because you knew the reason or you thought you knew the reason, but rather you just did it, you know, mitzad chumra, because that's what your family did, so then you should do Hataras Nadarim. Meaning that if you took it upon yourself because it's the family minhag, which is probably why most people take it upon themselves, then you should do Hataras Nadarim if you want to change the minhag. But if you thought it misfara had made sense, and then you realize it doesn't make sense, then you don't have to do Hataras Nadarim. So that's verse one interesting tshuva about changing the minhag. And the other interesting one is Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva that if you grew up in a community where the whole community kept gebraks, so that's the minhag hamakom, and that's the minhag that a person should keep. Definitely, if they didn't do any Hataras Nadarim, maybe you could get out of it if you do Hataras Nadarim, but he doesn't really recommend that. If you grew up in a family where there was a strong minhag of keeping gebraks, then you should keep the minhag. But he says, if the minhag hamakom of where you grew up was not really to keep gebraks, meaning it was a West Hempstead type community, it wasn't a Hasidic community, it wasn't a community where everyone kept gebraks, and you just did it because your family does it. So he says that if you continue doing it when you're a grown adult, so then if you want to stop, then you have to do Hataras Nadarim. But if you just, by the time the person grows up and they're out of the family in terms of living there, and they want to just change the minhag, it wouldn't even need Hataras Nadarim, because they were just doing it because that's what the family did. It wasn't the minhag hamakom per se, it was just the minhag of the family. But then when the person is starting their own family or is an adult, they would not have to do Hataras Nadarim to change the minhag. And there's a lot more to say about changing minhagim, but just two interesting ha'aras just to throw in there. And another thing just to point out is that keeping the minhag is also could be detracting from Simchas Yontif, and that's why many who do have the minhag on the last day of Pesach, on the eighth day, which is only Derabbanan to begin with, for the sake of Simchas HaChag, they do eat gebraks, because there's more to eat when you could have gebraks, so there's more Simchas Yontif. Okay, before we wrap up, any questions about gebraks? Okay, so just a very, very last thought. So this week's parsha is Parshas Tzav, and one of the korbanos that the parsha deals with is the korban toda. The Gemara in Brachos and the Nun Dalet Amud Beis famously says in source Tesvav, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Arba Tzrichin Lahodos. There are four people that have to bring a korban toda, and as you probably know, this is extrapolated to the four people that say a Brachos Hagomel, Yordei Hayam, those who cross over an ocean, Hochem and Baros, those who cross over a desert, Mishahaya Cholav and Esrapa, someone that becomes sick and then becomes better. Mishahaya Chavash Bebeis HaAsurim V'yatza, and someone who is in jail, who is in prison, and then is released. So the Maharal has a beautiful approach to this. It's in the Drashos for Shabbos HaGadol. I saw it quoted in Rav Simon's Sefer in Parshat Tzav. And as was mentioned before, Rav Simon just recently lost his father. His father's neshama shav aliyah from the learning that we're doing. So Rav Simon quotes this Maharal, who says that why does the Korban Todah for these four things? He says because when a person brings a Korban Todah and wants to be grateful for Hashem saving them, he connects it back to the original time that we were saved as a nation. Because if you think about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it encapsulated all four of these salvations. Yordei Hayam, right? We crossed over the Yamsuf. Holchem Baros, we had to pass through the desert. Cholav and Esrape, the fact that we didn't have the Shchin and the Kinim, we didn't have the illnesses, Kol Machla, Asher Samti B'Mitzrayim, Lo'asam Alecha, we didn't have the Machlas in Mitzrayim and we were healed. Therefore, it was as if we were sick and we became healed. And Chavash Beis HaAsurim, it was as if we were in prison in Mitzrayim. So whenever we bring a Korban Todah, we're not just bringing our own things of what happened to us individually, but we're connecting to the national things and to the original thank you that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And I think during this time, it's especially important to really find things that we're grateful for. There's so much, unfortunately, there's a lot of sadness going on around us, and Hashem should continue to protect us and all of Klal Yisrael. But I think now more than ever, it's important to find things that we're grateful for. And when we do find those things that we're grateful for, we're not just grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for helping us, but it's connecting back to the national salvations of the Korban Todah that really go back to the national salvation when we became a nation, and we're so grateful to be the Am HaNivchar. So with that, Chevra, we should all have a healthy, great week. I just wanted to end by saying that next week, Mir Tashem, Monday night, we're going to be having Chabura, and we would love for it to be an interactive Chabura on the Haggadah. So Ben and I will coordinate just to facilitate some sort of Google Doc, where if the Chevra from the Chabura could sign up to different parts of the Seder and share like a 3 to 5 minute Dvar Torah on that part of the Seder. And that way we could hear from many of the Bnei HaChabura as we go into Pesach and Mirat Hashem next week. So stay tuned for that. Any other?
Yeah.